up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe. Yes, of course, it is me, one of your hosts, Jonathan. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie.
Hello there. Welcome, everybody.
So, yeah, on this episode, sadly, we do not have a guest, which is a bit of a bummer, but just because we like to release content as frequently as possible, we thought we would jump on and just record the two of us and pick a really obscure, absurdist movie from the list on the poster. It is Man Bites Dog. So, yeah, it's safe to say that I think both of us have no clue what this film is or was before watching this.
See, like, it's kind of funny, like, man, see when you're reading, like, when we looked at the poster and you were reading out all the names, you said Man Bites Dog. I was like, that sounds familiar, but it must, I don't know why it does, because I know nothing about this film at all. So, I genuinely don't know. This film's really, really obscure. It's probably, I think it's the first foreign film we've done. Is it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
There probably won't be a trailer played in this one, probably, and probably not no clips from the film, just for the fact that it is in a different language, and
yeah,
also the subject, yeah. It's a bit of a... We should probably give a warning out for this film and for people who are going to watch it, because
yep.
This is by far, out of all the films I've done so far, including the stuff for the Halloween or anything, this is probably the roughest film we've done so far. It is quite rough. I will say that it's pretty.
What do you mean quite rough? I mean this is rough. It's not quite rough. I mean we even done an episode in Hard Candy and we thought that was going to be a tough one.
Well, yeah, that's true. This one's probably worse.
Yeah.
Definitely.
This is definitely way worse. For me, it was such a tough one. This is going to be a strange podcast. And just a heads up, this could be relatively short compared to the other podcasts that we do, just purely because I don't really know how much of this we can dive into without it just being a bit uncomfortable, I'm not going to lie. So yeah, for those of you who aren't familiar with the film, which I'm guessing that anybody who's clicked on to listen to this probably won't be, and if you've decided to watch the film before listening, I hope that it didn't scar you too much. And if you've already seen it, then and fair enough if you like these kind of pushing the boundaries kind of films. But yeah, we should just say this is a Belgian black comedy crime mockumentary that was released in 1992. And the premise of the film is it's basically a documentary film crew who follows a serial killer named Ben kind of around as a sort of fly-in-the-wall style just to see what he does on a day-to-day basis, really. But what happens as we get further into the film, the boundaries kind of become blurred and the film crew then start to get involved with the crimes essentially what are taking place, which basically culminates in one of the most horrific scenes I think I've seen in a long, long time in a film. And quite frankly, I'm just going to put this out there, if this film was not on this poster, I would never have watched this film. It is not something that appeals to me in any way, shape or form. And it kind of made me wonder if a film like this really needed to be made. But then again, the same goes for films like a Serbian movie or whatever the fuck that thing's called.
Serbian film,
is in the same sort of vein. Not, I don't know if it's sort of set up like a mockumentary like this, but I just think the subject matter. I just think there's some things that probably shouldn't be on film.
Did you enjoy this film at all?
Not really.
Fair.
It was really tough for me. Like, I'm not one for like this kind of pushing the boundary. Like, Hard Candy was a tough watch, but there was some real good elements in it. Like, two lead actors were incredible, really good. You know, it was a professional movie, obviously. This was a bit different, obviously, super low budget, sort of independent, that was made for next to nothing, essentially. I get why in this time period a film like this was released, because cinema was kind of breaking new ground in the early 90s. And but the thing is this film kind of paved the way for a lot of these kind of weird, absurd movies that were made sort of 10 years later. I'm not super familiar with Gaspar Noé as a film director. I know who he is. I know that he made a movie called Irreversible, which is meant to be extremely brutal. But there seems to be a premise and a style of story making and art to him, as much as I know. Whereas with this, it's just so over the top and so bizarre.
I mean, bizarre is like the kind of biggest word I would describe this film. It is so odd. It's quite ridiculous. One thing I would say is I wouldn't really compare this to a Serbian film. Like, I get the kind of point that they're both quite disturbing films, but I think a Serbian film, from what I've heard about, there's no point in watching it. It's just like, it just sounds completely and utterly disturbing for the sake of being disturbing. Whereas this film, I actually kind of enjoyed this one, honestly. It's really weird. It's quite violent, quite disturbing, but it's compared to other films, it's probably not as bad. Maybe this, it's more the, it's, I don't know what it is. There's something about it that's so dodgy. I think for a lot of people would find it quite hard to watch because they think it seems very real, which I didn't really feel it. I always felt it felt kind of silly at times. When I watched it, I just thought there was no way I could ever find that this was real. But so many people think it is. Just something about it makes people kind of believe that it's kind of, some people actually did believe it was real. It was like a whole thing. But it is quite violent, but it's not compared to other things. I think when this film originally came out, it got an NC-17 rating, of course. I think that year there was only two other films that got NC-17 ratings. Both those films are actually probably more graphic than what this film is. But there's just something it was Bad Lieutenant.
What, the Harvey Keitel movie?
I think so, and there was another one, I can't remember what it was called.
Werner Herzog.
Is that it?
I think that's the director of Bad Lieutenant.
So yeah, it's weird.
What else would it have been, like 92?
I saw it somewhere, I can't remember. I was reading enough and I can't remember where it was. I saw it. But the people,
I think the thing is with this though is, I mean, it's not, I mean, we've done films that are kind of over the top gore, like we've done Robocop and it's kind of over the top gore in that sense. This is a bit too real, I think, is the problem. And I get that there is some comedic parts to this, and I suppose that's where people might tap in, but there is some things that you can't really defend, I suppose.
There's, for the most part, pretty much, I quite like this film. I think it's an interesting journey. I think the main guy who acts in it is great. There's something about it, I think he does it really well. It all seems kind of improv, but it's all scripted. I saw somewhere that when you see his family for the first time, they thought it was an actual just documentary on his life. So that was all like unscripted. That was just them acting normally. They didn't actually know what the film was going to be and stuff like that. It's kind of weird. It's like, it's because the three main people in it, so they all used their first names in the film, which is their actual real first names as well. They were just film students at the time when they made it. Remy, he was he the one who wrote it, or did I or I can't remember what he directed and write. I can't remember, but he was like a big part of the kind of writing thing. He's also like the kind of out of the kind of the documentary crew is the kind of main. I think it's his idea. I don't know. They came up with it because
it's his story.
Yeah, they came up with it because it was cheap, easy to make. Was it was going to be cheap to make, and also
aye, but did it have to be about this subject matter? You could have done a mockumentary. They're cheap to make. Did it have to be this?
I don't know. I'm surprised how. I mean, it looks. It doesn't. This film doesn't look great, but it looks all right. And to be honest, they must have had like a tiny budget. I'm surprised how certain things look quite well in this film. Like, why do all the gunshots look really good? There's you think that's an expensive thing to do, but they all seemed, the gunshot effects were done quite well. It's quite odd.
Probably because they are so close to real as you can possibly get. I think in all these big budget films, you get things that are too manipulated and they end up looking too over the top for it to even seem real. Whereas this does kind of seem real. Like the part where he's just been released from hospital and they give him a holster as a present.
Oh my God.
And he asks for his revolver and he's like, the way he's talking, it's like, oh, like, it's so easy to move now. And he just pulls out the gun and shoots the guy in the forehead. You don't get to see like the impact, but you do get to see the aftermath. And it does hold frame in a lot of these things, like where you get to see it.
I'm not going to lie, that scene was probably the funniest scene for me in the film. I've seen it coming, but it's the awkward silence afterwards.
The blood splatter on both the women.
Everyone's just sitting like silently. It's just kind of like.
Exactly. It's like, it's what just, the fuck? Did they just expect this to happen?
The film felt so parody for me at times. There's like so many, like, it's weird. It feels like it's trying to take itself kind of grounded and real, and then it does something completely wacky. Like when he runs into the assassin who's got his own film crew. That was so funny. Why did they, like, what? Like, why did they come up with that? Or that when the mic operators keep on dying, the first time the mic operator dies, it's like, it seems like a genuine, like, kind of heartfelt thing, and then the second one dies and he does the exact same thing, so it becomes comedic the second time round when a mic operator dies, because he literally says like the same words he said for the first person, so it becomes from being kind of sad genuine to comedic effect. It's quite, I honestly see most of this film as being quite comedic to me, because it's just so
well
weird.
That is a riff on This Is Spinal Tap,
right?
The music mockumentary about This Is Spinal Tap, the infamous non-real band. That's on the list as well. We'll touch on that. But in that, the whole thing is the drummer keeps getting replaced in that film. Whereas the mic?
Yeah, it's the mic operator. Guy keeps
dying or keeps getting replaced in this one. It's a wee kind of heart back. Yeah, I think there's a lot of this, like, this film's been sort of coined as, well, by some people, and there's not a lot that I could have found online about this film as well. It's really, really difficult to find things about it. We're just giving our opinions. This is about as real and raw a review as it can be. Like, we're not looking at what other people have said, really, because there's not a lot out there, and as far as I can see, I think somebody said that this is Spinal Tap for horror, or something like that. Which is kind of true. It's a mockumentary of a completely different style. I don't really want to mention the scene which makes me feel super uncomfortable.
I think I know what you're talking about.
I would hope that you did.
Because I know what I'm thinking. I think it's the one scene they went too far.
That's way too far.
There's literally, it doesn't add anything to the film. It just kind of randomly happens at a point, and there's absolutely, I kind of get the point. No, not really. There was completely no need for it. I don't really know why they just suddenly done it, and it's just so bizarre. And if they took it out, it wouldn't have affected the film at all. It just seemed really shocking just to have randomly in like the kind of middle, later half of the second, getting to near the end of the middle, to suddenly have this like horrific kind of scene. And it's done weirdly, and it's just so bizarre. I don't believe that the film crew would go in on it as well. I don't know. There was no need for it. I think that was the one scene that ruined a lot of the enjoyment for the rest of the film for me, because that was just super disturbing, and there was no need for it at all. Didn't add anything at all. It was just, they put it in for some reason. It's not comedic. How can a scene like that be comedic? It's not.
It can't be.
It's weird. I don't know why they did it.
It's very strange, because like, I don't like this film. I'm just point blankly going to say that. But I can understand why, to a point, that people do like it. I can get on board. But as soon as I see a scene like that, or violence towards children, you know, when he smothers the
that doesn't bother me as much, but I can see why. I get that. Right.
I think there's certain things that you should just be left out of films. Do you need to have a kid in that scenario when you go and rob a house? You don't need to.
I think
there's certain things that shouldn't really be like...
I think the child part helps show what he's really like. I think the other part was just, there was just not really a need for it. I think that the child part as well also shows how the, because it can, I mean, like, that's one of the big changes where, like, the documentary crew actually start helping him. And it's such a horrific thing to start helping with. But I think going any further than that, I think the way they'd done that, they could have done that a lot worse, and it was still bad as it was. The other scene was just completely awful and didn't add anything. I didn't mind the child part as much, but that other part was just... I mean, I watched it and didn't flinch, but it's awful. That's not what I want to see in a film.
Exactly. We're beating around the bush, and we're not really going to bring it up by name.
Yeah.
If you watch this film, you will infinitely know straight away what scene we're talking about. And it's done really bizarrely.
Yes.
Like, as stupid as it is, like, it seems really weirdly circumstantial. Like, they barge into this house and that's happening. Like, how did they know that was going to be happening? This is where you can see the film staged, and you can almost tell that it's not real. But because of what happens, or what you're meant to believe is happening, is so viscerally wrong to every fibre of your being as a human being, specifically good people, that becomes a really, really uncomfortable thing. And it actually lingers on screen for too long. Now, I don't like things that linger on screen for too long. Like, I mean, if you kind of got the nuts and bolts of what was going to happen in that scene, then you cut to this... So there's a real jarring cut at the end of that scene, because it cuts to like the morning after.
Yeah.
They could have just put all the implication in place for you to get to where you needed to know in your brain without actually having to show you what was going to happen. They could have cut to the morning after, and you would have been able to easily put two and two together. But you wouldn't have had to... It went on for, like, minutes, but it wasn't that long, but it felt that long.
Yeah.
It's a bit like in... Fucking, I don't know why Ari Aster's Hereditary is coming back up, but when the decapitation scene, he's just lingered on that kid's head for too long. Like, there's certain things that just shouldn't be on screen for more than a second or two. Just make sure your audience know the narrative that you're trying to put forward, and then just cut away from it, because you don't need to be that way. But I can understand why filmmakers want to be like gaudy and out there and experimental and break every barrier, and I can totally understand it. But I suppose that there's films that do it in a kind of way where the film and the cinema, and like we referenced the Serbian film, and there's a lot of shit in that which is a bit nonsensical and a bit nonsense, but it is really quite harrowing stuff, like if you just look at it as a basic bit of information. But if you compare that to Park Chan-wook's Old Boy, which explores a lot of disturbing themes potentially to people, but it's a fucking great film.
Hmm.
So you can kind of, you can have things like that in movies. And for those of you who don't know what happens in Old Boy, essentially, he falls in love with, or sleeps with his daughter. But if you watch the film, he doesn't know, because he's essentially been kidnapped for fucking 20 years or however long it is. Really, but it's a real great film. And I love Old Boy. And it seems kind of weird, or maybe hypocritical, for me to say, "Oh, go and check out Park Chan Wook's Old Boy, but don't watch this film," because, and folk might watch Old Boy and go, "Can't believe you recommended that to me, because it's got some really fucking dodgy shit in it." And I'm like, fair. So maybe I'm being hypocritical, and it's maybe just because I like certain pieces of cinema more than others. And it's kind of the same with a Serbian film. I wouldn't watch that because I know everything about it. But then again, it still has similar themes in that film as Old Boy has. But yeah, I would sit and watch Old Boy.
I think the difference was I wouldn't compare Old Boy to a Serbian film. I wouldn't even compare this film. I think there's enjoyment from this film. Whereas I think a Serbian film, my biggest issue is I know pretty much everything about it as well. Is it just seems like it's disturbing for the fact of disturbing. It's not even like a, that good a story. Some people seem to like it, but it's going for being so disturbing to the fact that it's almost laughable at some point. So like there's a way this, the, I'm not going to wait to say what, how it ends, but the way the Serbian film ends is tries to go for shocking disturbingness so bad that it actually will make you probably go, well, it made me laugh a little bit when I heard about it. That's my issue with that film, is it just wants to be disturbing. It's trying to be the most disturbing film ever made. It's, most people would call it the most disturbing film ever made. It's just not a good watch, though. If you're going to go for something like that, make sure it's like a watchable film and not just like, oh, let's make this happen and make this horrific thing happen and all that. It's such a bizarre film. I don't know what they went with that. Whereas with this, I can kind of see, I just think that one scene, for the most part, it was just, no, just that one scene in general is just awful. No, because just, I don't even know what was like in their heads when they went, oh, let's do that. Like, well, is that Breaking Bad? That's just been, I don't know. It's just shocking, and I just don't know. And it's out of nowhere, because it was like a random part of the film where they're just like drunk and it just kind of happens. But it's like, well, mm-hmm. Just cut to the next day. Like, why? Oh, I don't know. I don't think I'll ever understand what was going through their heads for that one scene and why they did it. I think it takes a little bit out of the film for me.
But that's the whole point. Like, they'll probably be like, well, that's why we put it in, because it gets people like us talking about it.
Mm.
And they, well done. I mean, we are on a podcast in 2023 talking about a film that came out in 1992. It done probably what they expected it to do to people. I suppose the sort of overriding factor is, at least we know it's not real.
Yeah.
At least we know that they weren't trying to make it real. Like, it was a mockumentary from the outset. I mean, people that thought it was real, I mean, that's kind of on you. I know it's shot in a real fly-in-the-wall style, but
it's quite, yeah, over the top in times. He's literally going about, the amount of times he uses a gun and just he's just shooting everywhere, and just no one seems to be that bothered about it.
Yep. And I just think that I'm trying to think about things like, would we have got sort of, there's films in across the board that are shock factor. I mean, this is one of the main reasons why I'm not a big horror movie fan, is because I think some of the sort of horror people out there that are like totally staunchly horror fans obviously go into these kind of deep realms of horror movies to find the kind of shock factor horror films. And I've seen a few of them in my time. Like, I remember watching I Spit in Your Grave. Like, and that's a fucking rough movie, by the way. Like, it is rough to watch. And I think I was only about 15 at the time.
Yeah, I never fancied watching that one.
See what I mean? Like, but, so I've watched things like that, and I don't know. Maybe I was trying to find a horror in that would kind of grip me, and it's just, I suppose, maybe watching films like that and seeing just how kind of out there and kind of boundary pushing that the genre can be is maybe just put me off. Because I think you get people that make horror movies just for the sake of making horror movies and being able to sort of get away with murder, essentially, quote unquote, is a bit strange. And this kind of seems in the same ballpark, where it's just a bit silly for silliness. But then again, if you look at the way people talk about this film, I think it's really, really popular amongst the fans of the film or the people that have seen it.
Yes. Like again, it brings back this how bizarre this film, these films are and stuff like that. But I got a question though. How long was the version of the film you watched?
I watched the unedited version, so it was like an hour and 35 minutes.
So that means you watched the proper NC-17 version of the film. I
did.
Watched the unrated version, which is actually only 92 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't know what the minutes were cut out from, because it's not from the two worst scenes that you think it would be. It's not from them. They're still the same on both versions, because I checked. So,
well, that's stupid. Like,
yeah.
You think about the edited cut. If they were trying to cut it in a way, you've got a scene that you could just cut completely from it, and you might have a fighting chance. But if you leave that scene in, you're getting nothing but an NC-17, or an 18, or anything. Like, I mean,
so I just don't like. That's like what, 4 minutes of what taken out. See, at the end of your film, did it fade to black or did it run out of film?
I can't remember, actually. I think I stopped watching when the credits started rolling.
Yeah, it's before. See, before the credits. So before the credits happened, did it just fade to black once the film?
Nah, it just cut. I think it cut to. It kind of felt like weird. It kind of cut to a credit sequence.
So you see, in my version, it rolls a little bit longer and like nothing for a bit, and then it just starts. It's like the film runs out and it goes white.
Right. Maybe it did.
Because I'm pretty sure your version doesn't have the one you had didn't have that. But the one I did,
I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know why they kept that out in that version, but the one I watched did have that. I only knew about this because I read it and I was looking at the YouTube comments, because there were quite a few YouTube comments about the film. And yeah, by the way, I watched this on YouTube, by the way.
I never watched it on YouTube, but I'm not going to tell people where I watched this.
If you do want to watch this film, you can easily get it on YouTube. There's two uploads on it. Yeah.
I don't know if it's free, but people have uploaded it to YouTube.
I don't think,
and I think it's one of those films that, who owns it realistically?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the writer and guy,
are they going to take it down?
The Remy guy who wrote it, or his thing, he's dead. He committed suicide in 2006, which is kind of rough.
I mean, that's rough, but you think about, I mean, he must here, disturbed people, man. It must have been a wee bit disturbed to write a film like
this. It's kind of weird. Those three, like, so the main actor, Ben, he's still a French actor, and actually he's quite a big French actor, so he still does stuff. There, one of them became a cinematographer, but you don't really hear much about him. And then Remy, he dropped out of film school, went into advertising, and then, well, 2006, he ended up dead. It's kind of weird. So, yeah, I don't actually know who would really... Like, this is not an easy film to find. I'm pretty sure it's banned in a couple, or it was banned. It was banned in Ireland and Sweden.
Sweden, yeah.
Two random countries for it to be banned in, but yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't banned in any other places, to be honest.
I mean, if you go on about this all the time, like an NC-17 is basically death.
Yeah, true.
Or a movie. Who's really seen that? Like, unless you can find a copy of it, in the secondary market. I mean, this isn't making loads of money in movie theaters because it's an NC-17 or an 18 in this country. It's for it actual off topic a wee bit. Talk about NC-17. So there's a film on the list that we need to watch for our upcoming podcast. I'll just let the cat out of the bag. We're doing a series of podcasts, obviously based on a poster. A lot of them are old films or older films. There'll be a few kind of more newer ones coming along the way. So our ones within, there'll be some more newer ones coming along the way. Sort of ones within the last 10 years, at least. I mean, maybe not something super new, but we were having a chat about it, and I says maybe we should do more current content. So we're going to be doing an Oscars prediction episode where we will try and predict the sort of the top 8 categories. We'll watch all the films and we'll give our sort of thoughts on them, and then try and predict who we think will win or who we want to win and who we think will win. And then obviously roll around probably a day or two after the Oscars is done, we'll do a recap and see if we how well we've done and see if we got in the sort of the mind of the people who vote the Academy. But it's quite interesting. I'm quite a wee bit into my watching. But I talk about NC-17, this is where it all comes back around. Sorry for that kind of off tangent there. NC-17, I started to watch Blonde on Netflix. Do you know that's the first Netflix film to ever get an NC-17 rating?
Blonde? Is that the Marilyn Monroe?
The Marilyn Monroe doc is an NC-17.
Really? I didn't think it would be that bad. Yeah. What?
It's got some really hard-hitting scenes in it, apparently. And that's not why I had to turn it off. This is where creative minds and people that have just been given full creative control on projects, this is what streamers kind of let people do. And it's a great platform to have. I know that there's people out there that will be like, oh, streaming services are killing movies or killing like old school Hollywood or old school cinema. They aren't really. They're given a sort of safe space for these kind of really creative people to expand and do things that they want. But I'm just going to tell you this. This is a film, Blonde, I'm talking about, where somebody should have reined in what the director was doing. Because this film jumps between different ratios. So you get different aspect ratios. Mm-hmm. It also jumps between black and white and colour a lot. I watched the first 15 minutes of it, and it was jumping between black and white and colour. And I was like, this is really difficult to watch. It's quite a tough watch, just in that aspect alone. I'm nowhere near the sort of brutal stuff happening yet. But yeah.
I heard it wasn't very good.
It's not meant to be that good, for one. And I did read about some of the scenes that gave it an NC-17. And I'm like, if they're as bad as the way that they sound written down. But sometimes things out of context written down sound worse than a visual. So when that episode comes out, you'll hear our thoughts on Blonde. Which is kind of, you know, what's pissed me off the most about it is I'm having to watch some of these films that I really don't want to because they're nominated for one award. Like, the only reason Blonde's on the list is because Ana de Armas's performance has been awarded or been nominated. And I'm like, fuck. Like, I really didn't want to watch this film, but I'm going to have to. But yeah, it could be the last film on the list out of the films we need to watch that I watch, though. But anyway, that was just a wee bit off tangent and talking about NC-17. But then again, they don't really give a shit because it's a Netflix movie and it was all made for a streamer. So they don't really care if it's an NC-17. They must have some NC-17 rated programs. There's some fucking programs on that service that are like right kind of out there and about some weird shit.
TV shows are rated differently.
Ah, right, okay.
So you get like TV Emmy, which is stuff like that. It's weird. I know. I don't know what it is with the American ratings, man. We just have the one rating for TV and films. They have like TV stuff. So I think, I don't know what their highest TV one is, but most things on Netflix are like mature TV Emmy, I think, which is TV mature. So
in the UK, your programming still rated kind of age wise as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
it's
fair.
A simple way to do it, I guess.
It just kind of was a bit of a bizarre one that Blonde's the first Netflix NC-17 rated film. But anyway, back to Man Bites Dog. Right, we've spoke about what goes on in the film, the subject matter. We've kind of glossed over the subject matter, some of it, because we don't really want to speak about it. If you watch it, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. The whole serial killer aspect, stuff like that. I mean, that there's serial killers and loads of shit. There's killers and loads of shit. There's, like, I think there's the way that it's been sort of portrayed is quite unique in the way it's this kind of documentary, fly-in-the-wall style approach that's obviously mockumentary, but is perceived to some people as a real life story. And it's obviously how the film crew over being with the person for a number of days and weeks or however long the film spans, I'm not quite sure, they get more and more involved. And I suppose that's like another mental aspect to the film. But I just wanted to touch upon the whole technical stuff of the film. I mean, I quite like black and white, and don't get me wrong, I like this being shot in black and white, but it's, like Kenzie mentioned earlier, it's probably due to budget, I would assume. But I don't think there's anything super like amazing about this film. I think me and you could take a camera out and recreate this.
Yeah,
Which then again isn't necessarily a bad thing.
I think the biggest kind of thing about it, since this film looks so kind of cheap, it actually makes the film look a bit better because of that. Because they kind of get away with like a lot of things, and since it's in documentary style, they get away with a lot of errors and stuff like that in the film, and it actually makes it seem more authentic and makes it seem more real, since it seems it's meant to kind of appear that way. So almost, so it's like a kind of mockumentary that's also on a low budget in the film as well. So it's like, yeah, it's
like, because the amount of time you see the behind the scenes guys that you wouldn't probably see in a real documentary.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't see somebody with a boom pole like come into frame and be left in a film.
You mean you probably wouldn't see a guy in a boom pole getting shot twice, but
yeah. There's a lot of aspects to this film. Breaking the fourth wall, I don't know if that's really what this is doing, but it's doing something kinda like that.
I think they break the boundary of the interview, documentary style.
Right.
Because it's kind of the whole thing. At the start, you feel really... The crew and Ben feel completely separated, and you kind of feel like you're watching through the kind of crew's eyes, and then suddenly, kind of halfway through the film, it gets really obscured when the crew actually start helping them. And by a certain point in the film, it gets to this point where Ben starts referring to the crew as his team.
Yeah.
So it kind of shows you, like, oh, this is not what it was originally. This is, they're involved. It's an interesting thing. It's quite horrific also. It's bizarre. Like I said, I've said that word so many times, but it really is.
Bizarre's probably, a good word for it.
Honestly, I actually did quite enjoy this film. I think it's got its comedic moments. I don't think it's as funny as it thinks it is at times, but for me, the performance of the main guy in it is really good. I think he done a really good job, and I'm not surprised to see that he's still acting to this day, because I think the way he done it is I think the way they all done it, since it everything kind of works for it, and everything doesn't seem like it's scripted, and that's quite good. I mean, it doesn't help, but also I don't speak the language. Maybe if I spoke the language, I could maybe tell how the acting was a bit more, but from what I saw, I don't know. I think they did a good, quite a good job of the performance of it. And if it convinces people it's real, I think that kind of shows you. I think a lot of the stuff he says is really interesting. Getting into the mind of the main guy was actually really interesting for me in this film. And his kind of weird kind of charm and odd charisma and his completely horrific sides. And how he just, he's such an interesting character. I mean, he's insane. But at the same time, there are certain moments where you think he doesn't seem like that insane, but then you see, like, okay, no, he really is. It's, yeah. But then I don't really get why the crew gets so, especially Remy, or how he gets so kind of, and you don't get to see much from the crew's side. Like I said, the film isn't trying, I don't think the film is really, truly trying to be realistic. It is being something kind of surreal, I would say. But I think due to the kind of low-budget nature of it, I think a lot of people... I think that's the thing. See, when you make a low-budget thing and it looks kind of weird and dodgy, to some people that just makes it seem more real. I think if it was, like, higher production looked a bit better, I think that would already... people's disbelief would kick in more. But, yeah. Is there anything else we really have to say about this film? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't really have much more to say about it and all. In terms of what I think about it, no. I think we've probably spoke about it enough.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Obviously, Jonathan wasn't too keen into it. I feel like most people will probably not like this one. I think there'll be a slight few who do quite enjoy it. When I was looking at the YouTube comments of where I watched it, quite a lot of people a lot of them in the comments really enjoy the film. Some of the people in the comments were like, oh, I didn't think this film disturbing at all, and everyone was like, oh, well done, give this man a cookie. It's like, yeah, like, I don't know what, like, it is, I don't get people who are trying to say, oh, I didn't find it that bad. It's like, I mean, it is bad, don't lie. I watched it, I was fine through, like, the most of the film, but, like, I didn't find it disturbing. It completely is. It's definitely not going to be for everyone, but if you want to watch it, you can on YouTube. Watch it at your own risk. You've been warned what to expect, really.
Yeah, do watch it at your own risk. This is another service announcement of we are not liable if we are not telling you to watch this. Watch it at your own accord, just so you know. We're just putting that on record, just in case. Don't want to be getting any comments and stuff on social media going, oh, these guys told me to watch this film. Yeah, we didn't really. Just if it sounds like something that's going to interest you, which it might, because like Kenzie said, they did enjoy most of this film. But he even said there is some parts of it which are pretty rough. So to speak. But anyway, we've came to that point of the podcast where we give this film a rating out of 5 popcorn buckets. I will go first. I really can't get behind a movie like this, which is unfortunate because I can see why people like it. But there's so much sort of negative in this, and even if it's doing the mockumentary style and stuff, I still feel like there needs to be some form of narrative that can be compelling or kind of draw you in and make you see both sides of the coin. But I suppose there is the ultimate resolution at the end of this film where all the bad people essentially get shot, but you don't know who's doing the shooting. I don't know if we should say that. It's a bit of a spoiler, but
I think the end to this film is that weak that it doesn't really matter. That's the one thing I'd probably say about this film is just kind of
they essentially walk into this kind of derelict building and they all get shot one by one. Essentially,
I think it was the Italian guy.
What's that?
They keep on through like the kind of later half of the film. They keep on hinting that because remember his friend and his mother both got like a dead rat sent to them. which is supposed to be about that Italian guy or something. So I think it was probably them. But it's just, I don't know. I think they just got like, oh, let's just end the film. And there's like, here's a quick way just to end it. Everyone dies. There you go. It's not very strong ending at all.
It's not a strong ending, but I mean, at least we the bad people get their comeuppance at the end of it, I suppose.
That gives you that
kind of resolution to the people who are probably rooting for these people to not be here anymore. But yeah, spoiler alert there. But hey, and even that's weak. Like Ken said, it's not enough for me. That's not you can't just redeem bad people by killing them. You know, like. So yeah, I wouldn't recommend this film, and I will never watch this again. But as somebody who loves film, I'm kind of glad that I did watch something like this, and can see why it would maybe be made. But yeah, it takes a certain type of person to come up with a sort of story like this. But yeah, so. I mean, I don't really want to give something a 1 out of 5, but there's a lot of things that I really don't like. So I'm just going to give it 1 out of 5.
Really?
Well. Yeah, because I think there's probably better low budget kind of film student films out there. I mean, you look at El Maharachi, the Robert Rodriguez film that they made while he was still a student. That's probably leagues and bounds better than this, and obviously it's different style of movie making and probably had more money involved in that production, but then again it just shows you what is achievable. This film still had a bit of a budget, like it's not like it was shot for nothing. It's $33,000. That's a lot of money, like 30 grand. I could shoot a film for 30 grand, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, my favourite filmmaker, Christopher Nolan, he shot his first movie for £4,000. And it's better than this film, so. I think the whole low-budget nature is maybe blown out of proportion. If you're a film student, you're getting 33 grand to make a movie. It's a sizable amount of money for me. But yeah, I think it's fair. That's my opinion, and everybody's got their own opinion. And it's subjective, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a subjective viewpoint. This is where we're going to be widely apart on this, because for the last half hour or so, we've just been talking about the film, and now the nuts and bolts, and I've put a number or a rating on it. This is where you go, actually, I quite like it, and it's 3.5 out of 5.
That's probably where I put it. Yeah. I mean, there were some points of the film where I was like, could this really get to a 4? But nah, it's not getting there. It's definitely not. And I think after that horrific scene, I could have pulled it down to a 3, just because that scene just bothered me that it was in it.
I think that scene could take every single star off a film, realistically.
Like, there was just... I've talked about it quite a lot, but it's just... It adds... For me, I think whatever point they were trying to get across in that scene was all done with the whole part with the child. I don't know.
Why the fuck were they still there the next morning as well?
Fucking, I don't know.
It's strange as fuck, man. Like, scene in question, it's like it ends some, I don't know what happens. There's just a weird cut. It's like there's like a cut. It's quite a juxtaposition as well, because it's like you're cut and you're back in the same room and hours later, and it's like, films aren't normally cut that way or edited that way. You're normally, if you're cutting, you're changing some, I suppose, change of time, I suppose, is the parameter here for a cut. But and then it does this weird pan and you see like the bodies, and then there's just, I'm guessing it's Ben in the corner with his trousers doing Rooney's ankles, and he's kind of waking up. She starts moving. It might not be Ben, but I can't.
It's one of them, I don't know.
head as one of them. And I'm like, why the fuck would you even want to still be there after what happened? But then again, at that point, they don't give a shit, so.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, I don't think I've got much more to add. I would say it's a 3.5. One other thing I'd mention is I feel like this film has went from the version I watched anyway, was 92 minutes. I think it still felt slow at that time. I felt like I watched it for a while, even though it was only 90 minutes long. So I think it does drag a little bit. Kind of a bit, to be honest. But bar that, I actually do quite enjoy this film. Will I go out and watch it again soon? No, to be honest, I don't even know if I'll ever watch this film again, to be honest. But I will say that I actually did quite like it. For the most part, that scene really, again, I'll talk about that one. Bar that, everything else for the film I think works, kind of. It's weird, it's not definitely not for everyone. If you're interested, give it a watch and you'll see if you like it or not, but for me it's a 3.5 and I quite like it. I don't think it changed the game in any department really. I don't think because of that film other films were made, no, but it was made and yeah, quite like it. It's probably the most cultist of the films we've done.
Well, we'll probably go on to that just swiftly. So yeah, that is it for this section of the podcast. It is a 1 out of 5 for me, 3.5 out of 5 for Kenzie. That's a 3.5 for you, right?
Yeah.
So we will quickly jump in to the rules section. This will be pretty short. They are, like, what are the rules off the top of my head? Great podcast, and this,
low budget, box office flop,
rewatchability, quotability, not well received by contemporary critics, strokes, reviewers, explores controversial topics, subjects, and themes, and the cultural impact and legacy of the film. I believe that is all six.
Yes.
We just could probably speed run this. Low budget, literally. Yes.
I mean,
even though I said that I had a big budget for a student film.
It's the lowest budget we've done on this poster.
Oh, 100%. And it still managed to make $3.5 million off 33,000, so.
That's crazy, actually. That's good. It kind of was a success in a way. Wow.
Yeah, kind of. Well, that was monetary-wise, obviously. Well, that was an easy one. We won't dwell on it too much longer. Huh. Rewatchability, this is like a 90 minute movie. Even though I watched a 95 minute cut, the credits part's about 3.5 minutes because it actually cuts the credits at like 31 minutes on the clock, like 1:31. So it is about 90 minutes, and that's kind of the holy grail mark for rewatchability. Anyway, between that and hour 45, we say in the podcast. But like Kenzie did preface, it is pretty slow. And I think it's because it's the style of film is that you're just following this one character and there's nothing else happening. That is what makes it a real, real slow burn.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's a rewatchable film.
Well, the problem is it's got one of the most horrific things I've ever seen in a movie. So why would you want to rewatch it?
Even I liked it. I don't think I'm going to go back to watch it. I might, again, I don't even know if I'll watch this film ever again.
Would you recommend it to anybody?
Yeah, I actually
anybody
would probably.
You know?
I would maybe.
Don't know what to call out people in the podcast.
I don't actually know really. Now I think about it, I think I'd maybe say my brother should try it. He might think whatever he thinks about it. There's not many people I would probably recommend watching this film to. I don't know, maybe now, I don't know, maybe try my friend Evan, but again, I don't know, I would recommend it to a few of my friends. It's like, I would maybe give this a watch, I know they would be able to handle it, so I'd be like, yo, you might like this, or you might not.
Depends. Fair. Anyway, so, I think we agree that it's not rewatchable. None of us are chomping at the bit to rewatch this.
Yeah.
Quotability, it's None. Subtitled in it's form, subtitled, yeah. So it's really difficult for us to kind of pick something like that out. It'll be hard for a lot of people to pick something like that out. realistically. Which is, and it, because it's a documentary, mockumentary, yeah, it's not written in a way to have these super sort of one-off quirky lines that can be repeated or clipped out of context or, you know, anything that becomes a meme on the internet. There's probably memes within this film, I suppose, but if you could find them. But it's probably that obscure that nobody's ever thought to do anything like that to it. So, yeah, that's a no from this one. Not well received by contemporary critics stroke reviewers. Now, on IMDb, which is a bit of a weird one to start off with, but it's got a 7.4 out of 10. Then again, when you flick over to Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a 74% tomato meter score, which is based on 19 reviews. Just shows you how obscure this is, because normally when we do these films, you're looking at 100 critics are leaving reviews on films. But the caveat to that is 90% audience score.
Wow, it's got fans. Can you believe it's got a
90% audience score?
It's quite crazy. Yeah, that's quite.
That's
a lot.
High. Like, that's like incredibly high.
I think, but a lot of the fans of the film really like this film. Like the video I watched of it, he talks about how much he quite likes the film and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I was trying to see what Roger Ebert would have given it. I couldn't find a review. Couldn't find a review by Big Rog, but I did manage to find an Empire review by Mark Salisbury that was 3 out of 5. He's more in line with you than me, obviously. I mean, I'm down at a 1, so maybe I am being super harsh.
I feel like the one, I mean, it depends. If you really didn't enjoy this film, then that's fair. I think a lot of people would agree with you. I couldn't find many like reviews of it.
This is a Marmite film. Ever done one on the podcast, we said that about Hard Candy probably, and this is way more Marmite than that.
Yeah. I mean, most of the kind of reviews I saw for the most part are kind of quite like it or praising it a little bit, but I feel like so many people haven't seen this film. I think to the general audience it wouldn't be as good. I think I saw one reviewer who saw it was kind of said it was horrific, but for the most part, from the people who have seen it, they do actually quite like it. It's bizarre. I need to ban that word from this episode.
Yeah, we've said the word bizarre a lot. Yeah, so we now move on to explore controversial topics, subjects and themes, and this is where this film takes the cake and eats it, I suppose.
Yeah. Serial killing, murder, rape, everything under the sun.
It's got all the sort of taboo shit in it, you know. Yeah, let's not linger too long. Really controversial movie. If you haven't gathered that from the discussion before, then you never will. yeah, super, super controversial. Go in with be prepared. If you are going to watch this, be prepared to stop watching at any time. Like, don't just try and push yourself through it because you feel like you have to. Like, I mean, there is definite moments where you could turn this off and quite happily never go back to it. It's just one of those movies. Cultural impact, stroke legacy, don't really know. I mean, this film was written by a film student, was made by three friends that were at film school. Very obscure, so you're not really going to have much of a cultural impact and legacy from a film like this. I think this was trying to do its own version of things like a mockumentary style, which have went before. Like I said earlier, the whole killing off the sound person there's a bit of a kind of wink wink to this is Spinal Tap, where they're always replacing their drummer in the band. It's kind of similar. So yeah, they were obviously fans of certain things and wanted to make a film that they wanted to make, rather than them trying to break boundaries and pave new ground in any form of sort of technical aspect or story writing or, you know, film and editing. You know, it's nothing like that. So it probably really, for me, doesn't have much of a cultural impact and legacy, considering you can't find a lot about this film online as well, which is bizarre, considering when you look at all the other films that we've done, it's quite easy to get loads of information about them.
Yeah.
So yeah, guess we're just done for the rules section now.
I mean, that's really it. It's a quick one, but it's
kind of has to be.
There's not much information on the film as well, so it's just kind of how it has to be. So, well,
yeah.
It's a big question.
So we'll now
time.
Just, yeah, what's that?
It's a big question, though.
Right, we'll now just move on to Act 3 of the podcast, where we, based on the conversation that we've just had, do we think it is a cult film? And if so, where would we place it? If we would place it in our list of 100 must-see cult movies. I think this is safe to say that this is probably the most cult film that we've done.
Yes.
By quite a sizable margin.
I'm surprised it even made it on the poster, to be honest.
Well, I'm not, because maybe the poster should be filled with films like this rather than
yeah,
the
it should be, but like
doing.
We've literally just done Goodfellas, if you know what I mean. And it's also the same poster that has Goodfellas on it, and The Godfather has Man Bites Dog. And it's so bizarre. Yeah.
This is the film that all films should be now compared to in terms of cultness.
Yeah. This is like the cultest. This is the cultiest cult. This is some secret cult. It's like
the cultiest cult.
Yeah, literally, it's.
Yeah, it's. I don't think one of those. It's really, it's really perplexing to understand who put this together, when they have films like The Godfather and Goodfellas, and you know, there's other big movies like Apocalypse Now we've done, and like even Blade Runner and Fight Club to a certain degree. It's just. This film takes the cake in that category. Easily should be the most cult film on the poster. This is only episode 20, so we'll find out. But just glancing, it seems to be easily the most cult film. I mean, even The Goonies is on here. I mean, there is some cult films still to go that are like films that people might not have heard of, or the first films, or the films by directors that went on to have big careers, and there's a few of them on there as well to come. So that'll be an interesting discussion when we hit films like that. You know, does the filmmaker kind of push films back into the mainstream because people that are big fans of specific filmmakers will maybe go, oh, I need to watch their whole back catalogue. I mean, I know I do that with filmmakers that I love. You've watched every Tarantino movie.
I have.
So I think people just do that. But yeah, we both agree it's a cult film. This is going to be the interesting part. Where would it place in a top 100 list for us, not the podcast, us individuals? We have our separate lists going on here. I'm going to safely say that this will not make a top 100 list for me, which I think's quite hard for me to say, because coming up with 100 films is probably quite difficult, but I really don't think I could have a film like this in my top 100. It's just got a lot of things that I'm not I'm really uneasy about it, and I don't really want to see you. You're quite blasé about it. You're like, I really like this film, and you're quite open about it, and that's fine. But there's a lot of subject matter in this that I'm not saying I would feel a bit weird if I liked something like this, but everybody's different, do you know? So, safe to say that it won't make a top 100 list for me, but it is a massive cult movie.
I'm not too sure. If it does make it onto my list, it's like 99 or 100. It's like right at the top. And it's meant to be a must-see list. And I would really feel like if I did put this on the list, it'd be like, you can skip this one if you want to. It's like, read the description. Does that sound horrible to you? Don't watch it then.
Marmite, so, this is what the thing, it's an easy word, that is Marmite. You know, if you read anything about this film, you'll instantly know whether you want to watch it or not.
Yeah. I just feel like I probably should mention, if you're doing a cult film, this is as cult as you, so far as I've seen, this is as cult as you get, I should probably mention it. So I would probably put it at like 100 or 99 and be like, maybe 100, I'd probably put it like straight at the top. Be like, alright, there's this. Before we get into anything else, there is this. I quite like it. It's definitely not for everything. Even I have a lot of issues with the film. A big issue at certain points. Watch it. Like, again, it's like, it's, I don't know. Is it must-see? I know. I wouldn't say so. But I would maybe put it on the list. I don't know. We'll have to... We'll see. I at the moment, I would say it's either there or not on at all.
I think that's fair. I think it's a difficult one. If you really like this film, I can see why it would be easily in your top 100 must-see cult movies or top 100 cult movies. But I can easily see people siding with me going, really don't like it and really can't understand why it would make a list like that at all. So yeah, use the word again, Marmite, you'll either love it. Love might be a strong word. Like it. You'll either like it, like Kenzie, or you won't like it and be on the side with me. I find it hard to believe that there'll be people that watch this that'll sit on the fence.
I don't know. I don't think you'll find anyone who loves the film. That's what I think. If you love this film, okay, but like I like it. I do quite enjoy it, but like, it's not like, oh, it's the best film ever, or oh, this is up here with one of the best films I've ever seen. It's definitely not.
But to have a 90% audience score, there's got to be people giving this 5 out of 5.
Must be maniacs.
See what I mean? So like, even people giving it 5 out of 5, most people have more than one film as a 5 out of 5 or a 10 out of 10, however, or 100 out of 100, however you rate your films. So yeah, I doubt this is anybody's favourite film of all time.
Yeah.
And if it is, and you're listening to this,
seek help.
Or hit us up, and we'd quite like to have a conversation with you about it. And if it is one of these films where you have listened to this and watched it and decided that, oh, maybe I have something to say about it, like I said, hit us up on the old IG and get involved with us. We will talk to you, and potentially if we could do a re-recording of this episode, because we kind of decided to choose this film off the list because nobody was probably ever going to take it.
Yeah.
So it was probably the easiest way to get it done, one, and two, we don't always have time to get a guest prepared and ready to come on the podcast, so we still need to release content. So yeah,
it's probably better to not have a guest for this episode as well. I don't think a lot of people would have been happy to sit through this film.
Probably
it's not for everyone, is it?
I mean, it's still an hour and a half of your life. I mean, some people watch films more than once to kind of seriously go on and talk about them. So yeah, it's probably fair that it's the two of us. But no, that is it for another episode of Cult Film Cafe. As always, if you would like to check out past episodes of the podcast, you can do so by finding us wherever you get your podcast, just by searching Cult Film Cafe. You can give us a wee follow over on the Twitter and the Instagram. We are at Cult Film Cafe on both of those. And, I mean, we do have a Twitch channel that we haven't really been using. Maybe we'll start streaming
games
together.
We'll get back into it again, yeah.
Whenever we can get things sorted and stuff, Twitch could be an avenue of the future. But, yeah, it has been an interesting one. I'm probably right that it was just me and you for this one.
Yeah.
And, like, if you'd like to check out me and Kenzie individually, you can do by going on to the podcast and finding us, and you'll get links to both our own social media. And Kenzie started to stream again, so maybe you want to check him out on twitch.tv/CropTheStickman.
Yeah, been playing a lot of Hitman, new game mode and stuff like that.
Fucking talk about serial killers and shit, eh?
I love Hitman stuff. I love the Hitman
games. Maybe
well.
The reason why Kenzie likes this film, he likes people getting shot in the head and shit. Probably shouldn't say things like that. But anyway, it's been a pleasure as always. So it's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Podcast out.